Japan's Nikkei continues its run, surging to a six-year high. From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for David Brancaccio, with the global perspective on business and economics, and Japan's stock market is on a tear, with the Nikkei closing above 16,000 for the first time since 2007. This is after the Bank of Japan's campaign of monetary easing and Prime Minister Abe's aggressive attempts to revive the Japanese economy. We are joined now by the BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes in Tokyo. Good morning.
Good morning, Lizzie.
We've seen the Nikkei close at a six-year high. Is this a victory lap of sorts for Abenomics?
Yeah, well, I guess in a way it is. I mean, it's the continuing success, if you like, of the policies that Mr. Abe started at the beginning of this year. So a lot of printing of money, and that has helped to push down the value of the yen in particular. So this is making investors very, very happy.
There's this big run-up in the Nikkei, but do those gains and this monetary easing actually translate into the economy and to regular people's lives?
Well, they translate into some people's lives and to in some parts of the economy. So if you have a stock market portfolio, if you're someone who invests in the stock market, you've done extremely well in the last year. But for the average person in the street here in Tokyo, not much has changed. Salaries are not going up. Inflation is going up, but wages have stood still. So at the moment, very much the jury is out as to whether this is going to have the trickle-down effect to ordinary Japanese consumers that it is supposed to have.
So a significant geopolitical thing happened today. Prime Minister Abe went to a shrine for the war dead. It seems like a simple act here, but a very political one there. Does that have the potential to undermine this economic situation?
You know, this act in itself of going to the shrine today, it's very much upset China. It's very much upset Korea. It's basically putting Japanese-Chinese relations into the deep freeze for the foreseeable future. So, you know, this is a dangerous game that Mr. Abe is playing. China is Japan's biggest export market, even bigger than the United States. It has the potential to hurt Japan's economy if it goes wrong.
The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes in Tokyo. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm David Brancaccio.
Marketplace is not some engulf and devour corporation. It is a nonprofit and it is listener supported. So to keep our coverage strong and relevant, what you could do is make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will really help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by the end of this year.
Every 2 weeks on the show, we talk to our partners at Univision. And today, we're going to focus on corruption in Mexico. It was one of the focal points of President Enrique Peña Nieto's election campaign, and Transparency International does not give Mexico high marks. Enrique Acevedo is an anchor and correspondent for Univision. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Lizzie.
So, you are just back from a reporting trip to Mexico, and you've been looking at this issue of corruption. I guess I'm curious, do we have a sense of what the cost of corruption is? And I mean cost in the broadest sense.
Well, I don't know if you remember the movie called Siriana. It starred George Clooney a while back ago. And there's a scene in which a government official approaches a character played by Clooney, and he says that corruption is why the U.S. wins. If that's the case, then corruption is why Mexico keeps losing. Mexico is ranked 106 out of 177 countries by Transparency International. In terms of corruption, Mexico is worse than most African nations.
And what does that mean in terms of, say, foreign investors when they look at Mexico and say, you know, I might want to do business here. We're talking about a big country with a big workforce. Does that change their mind, do you think?
I think it does change their mind, especially now with the operation of drug cartels. They have this immense amount of bribes that it's needed to keep the system running smoothly. It's estimated that they spend around $1 billion a year just trying to keep this corruption machine well-oiled. Just very recently, Forbes magazine came out with a list of the 10 most corrupt Mexicans. You know, it's not surprising that there is this list. What surprised me was the fact that 9 out of the 10 people in that list are just out and about.
The U.S. is Mexico's biggest trading partner. Presumably, they could bring some resources to bear here and pressure to bear. What is their role here? What can the U.S. do? What have they done?
That's an excellent question. I think they have played along. Not only the U.S. government, but also U.S. companies. We've seen cases of entities like Walmart, for example, paying bribes in Mexico to open stores. And the U.S. government, in terms of the Justice Department, being able to detect that these corrupt officials in Mexico are spending money well above their salaries or their resources here in the U.S. and maybe paying attention to that and trying to work with their Mexican counterparts in order to fight corruption on both sides of the border.
Enrique Acevedo from Univision, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lizzie.
The cryptocurrency with a Shiba Inu on it was hacked yesterday. You know, the one spelled D-O-G-E coin. It's a potential successor to Bitcoin, and the dog is a very popular internet meme. People using it lost an estimated 21 million coins, which led us to a little internal battle about how to pronounce it. Dogecoin, Dogecoin, Doggy Coin. A little help here, please. You can let us know how you think you should pronounce the thing on Twitter at MarketplaceAPM or on Facebook at APM Marketplace. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.